Hi, this is Ken Laster, and this is a special edition of In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond. I'm currently away in Newport, Rhode Island, covering the Newport Jazz Festival, but I prepared a special Lee Morgan podcast for this week. Now, interspersed with Lee Morgan tunes, you will hear an interview that was conducted with Billy Hart. I found this on Billy Hart's website and was fascinated by his storytelling about the tragic day Lee Morgan was shot dead in a jazz club by his girlfriend. Recently, Billy Hart had been playing in Hartford with the Cookers, and at the time I was able to ask Billy for permission to use this interview for a podcast. He said it would be okay, but asked me to make it clear to my listeners that he was not present on that night, and much of that information that he talks about is third hand and has even been disputed by others since this interview was published on his website. However, regardless of the authenticity of what Hart has to say, it certainly gives you a fascinating first-hand taste of what the jazz scene was like back then in the early 60s. We start this podcast with a track called The Lee Morgan Story from Ben Williams. And then you will hear Lee Morgan's music along with Billy Hart's story of the day Lee Morgan died. For a complete track listing, please go to my website, www.jazzandbeyond.com, and then click on the podcast button. Also, please consider clicking the donate button at the website if you appreciate this weekly podcast and want to offer your support to help me defray the costs of bringing this music to you each and every week, as I have done for the past 5 years. Once again, thanks for listening and enjoy.
Candy, City Lights, The Cooker, The Lee Morgan Story, Expobedient, Leeway, Take 12, The Lee Morgan Story, Sidewinder, Search for the New Land, Tomcat, The Lee Morgan Story, Cornbread, The Gigolo, Infinity, The Lee Morgan Story, 7/10/1938, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, birth the prodigy. A brilliant musician in the making, Pops played organ at the church every weekend. At an early age, he collected records, grew well versed, who was playing the best with horns and drums, using arms and lungs to take the world by storm and build a legacy, son. Southern roots, though he was born in the Northeast, his parents left the South on a mission to make ends meet. He lived with passion, his heart pumped music, his father was his first true inspiration to do it. Each day revealed the true essence natural, study cats like Clifford Brown and Fats Navarro. Always wondering would the sun come out tomorrow, to end the ghetto pain and sorrow all so shallow. Dizzy Gillespie, Clifford Brown, Blue Note, The Lee Morgan Story, Hank Mobley, John Coltrane, Art Blakey, The Lee Morgan Story, Wayne Shorter, Benny Golson, Bobby Timmons, The Lee Morgan Story, Avant-Garde, 1960s, Joe Henderson, The Lee Morgan Story. His first teenage love was a trumpet. His sister got it for him cause she knew that he wanted it. I doubt she knew what all would become of it. He studied it at the School of the Arts, not knowing he would boo from the start. His teacher was a chain-smoking local who mastered the horn, y'all. He was no joke, yo. He used to cut out of school, him and his mans, just to break early and go to the jams. You know, network and build. Humble cat just showing his skill. Met Clifford Brown and Dizzy and he knew it was real. Known for his grace notes and light tone quality, methodically shaped the longest line so ill melodically. So much hard work graduated at last. Same month Clifford Brown died in a car crash. So sad it crushed him. Life goes on. Huge tragedy would thrust him. A star is born. Infinity, The Rump Roller, Charisma, The Lee Morgan Story, Delightfully, The Raja, Sonic Boom, The Lee Morgan Story, The Sixth Sense, The Procrastinator, Karamba, The Lee Morgan Story, Sextet, Lighthouse, Tao, The Lee Morgan Story. At the age of 18, he joined the Art Blakey Messenger team, the next level of things, living his dreams. A few months later, he was hired by Diz to play in big band gigs, only to further his biz. The experience outweighed the money so much he failed to attend the most prestigious school in the country. He shot junk in his veins, started to slip. His friends and family worried, was this gonna be it? No, soon arise again from the underground with a hard bop jazz type soulful sound. Sidewinder, first original composition, and most successful at the time in terms of chart positioning. His work ethic was massive, sideman sessions go on for days like discography lessons. Like so many, his downfall was narcotic, and soon to be his fate if he couldn't learn to stop it. It was a gun that ended his life at a gig in New York City by his so-called wife. 33 years young, so full of greatness. The Lee Morgan story, read about it in the paper. Study the streets, no filter. Dipping, caddy for daddy. The Lee Morgan story. Freedom writer, roots and herbs. The witch doctor, the Lee Morgan story. Indestructible, soul finger. Blue train, the Lee Morgan story. Helen Moore, slugs. Legacy, the Lee Morgan story. Out. Thank you.
mind telling you what I know, because I wasn't there. Remember, I was in San Francisco. You know, but I, you know, I talked to people who were there. Strangely enough, I haven't really talked to the people that were right there. You know, Freddie Wace was the drummer. Obviously, he's not there. I mean, he's not. But Harold Mayburn was the piano player. And I get the feeling that would be hard to talk to him about it. But I'm around Billy Harper, so I should be able to say something to him about it. And, of course, the bass player left New York after that and never came back, Jimmy Merritt. I mean, that's how it fucked him up.
Wow.
Right? So Harper is probably the closest thing. But the way I understand it from Eddie Henderson, evidently, you know, Lee Morgan was towards, at a certain point in his life, was a pathetic heroin addict. Pathetic, you know. Last time I had a serious talk with Cedar Walton, I was playing with Cedar Walton, actually in France, and you know, it just came up, and he said that Morgan was sleeping on pool tables. So that meant, I don't know how that happened, that somebody would let him sleep on their pool table. So maybe he knew somebody. You know, but for me, a pool table, you might as well sleep on the fucking floor unless it's warmer. But and then there were other people that said that he wouldn't wash. That Philly Joe put him out of the pad because he wouldn't wash his clothes, he wouldn't wash his underwear. So it was like, well, anyway, that's enough.
Nice.
To show you that the great Lee Morgan, who I love, you know, had sunk to that level. And evidently, some kind of way, he met this prostitute hustler, overage, you know, who had been doing this for years, but finally was getting too old to do it anymore, even though she still had this amazing body, if I remember correctly. Helen. And she, you know, that thing, that record, Night of the Cookers, you know, at that point, Morgan didn't own a horn. Somebody lent him that horn. So beside the fact that he hadn't been playing, the fact that he was playing somebody else's horn and mouthpiece, you know, it's no wonder that Hubbard seems to be, plus it was Hub's band, that Hubbard seems to be so far ahead of him. Mm-hmm. But I mean, but when you think about the fact that he was in such bad shape and didn't even own a horn, and he was playing somebody else's horn. But somewhere after that, he met Helen, and Helen, first thing she did, when she made sure he wouldn't pawn it, is buy him a trumpet. And then slowly, she pulled him out of that. And he was able to get his own band, right? So for the first time, Morgan had a steady band that was going around the country.
Was Helen helping organize?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, everything. She was everything, right? Now, that's amazing, because Afro-American woman, a little over the hill as a hustler, mm-hmm. was bright enough, because Morgan's bright. You know, that's one of the things they said about Morgan. Even when he was in that shape, he would read the New York Times cover to cover, right, every day. Right, so you know, he was bright and had, you know, and he was loquacious, he liked to talk, you know. Anyway, at that point, I saw him a lot. And you never saw Lee Morgan without Helen. Hanging out, gigs, anything. You never saw him without her. Right, so, and I saw him everywhere. New York, London, Los Angeles. You know, he had a good band, and they were recording, you know, he had the band with Benny Maupin, then he got the, then he really got happy when he had the band with Harper and Freddie Waits, because, you know, it was a solid band. It was, mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen him with other bands when he had Roker or had Higgins, but that wasn't a band that he could, you know. So at this point, too, he's making money, right? He's making money. They moved up on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx. So I get the feeling it was a pretty nice pad, you know, pretty, you know, upper middle class kind of path. And so that's where he was at when he met this young girl, whoever she was. But evidently she was very attractive. And Morgan fell in love with her. So you get the feeling that as much as he must have loved Helen, it wasn't that same kind of love. Because to hear it from Eddie's standpoint, Lee told Eddie about it and started crying. He said, "I don't know what I'm going to do about Helen because I'm in love with this girl. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what to do." Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, according to Eddie Henderson, so that means you could ask Eddie. Now, the way I understand it from another couple of sources is that he had made this album with Charlie Erlin. A week before, and he had bought $5,000 worth of cocaine from this cat. Maybe it was only $1,000, but by the time it got to me, it was $5,000, right? And supposedly, some of the cocaine, when he looked at it, had melted. So he called the cat and said that some of the coke is melted. So I don't know if he wanted some more, which wouldn't have been that hard to do after you paid a cat $1,000 or $5,000. The cat could certainly chip in a little. And the cat said, well, it wasn't melted when I gave it to you. So fuck you. Mm-hmm. So just before that happened, he had separated from Helen, and I guess he was living with the young girl. So this had to be barely, it couldn't have been more than a month, maybe even less. So he comes to work with this girl, and she has some small, I don't think it was a sports car, but probably some small kind of car, like a Triumph or something. That's what it looked like. But on the way to work, they totaled the car. And Morgan should have been killed instantly. And some kind of way he walked out of it without a scratch. He and the girl. But because of that, the girl was at the club with him. You know, she came to the slugs. And it had snowed all week, and so the snow had turned into ice. You know, this is the way I understand it. And so before that happened, I guess Morgan didn't expect the car accident, obviously, and evidently didn't expect the girl to be with him. Because when he talked to the guy on the phone about the coke, he said, Helen, this cat is trying to fuck me about the coke, so bring me my gun. So Helen shows up with the gun and sees the girl there. And I think Helen even went so far as to say, why would you tell me to come down here if you knew you were going to have your bitch with you? And, you know, and the music was about to start or something like that. And evidently, Morgan throws her out of the club. But he threw her out of the club. I guess she made somewhat of a commotion. And he threw her out of the club. But she had left her coat. So she came back in, supposedly, to get her coat. And Morgan came off of the bandstand. And I think, supposedly, to hear some people say it, I think I got this from Higgins, that she thought that he was going to hurt her or hit her or something. And she pulled the gun out. And supposedly it just went off by accident. Now, the pathetic thing about the story is that it was at Slugs. It was at 3rd Street and Avenue C. Right? And he basically died from loss of blood. If it had been at the Vanguard, he'd still be alive today because the hospital was right across. You know, the ambulance either didn't want to come or had some trouble getting down to Avenue 3rd, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the story as I know it.
And what did the community feel about Helen afterwards?
Well, I talked to McCoy Tyner about it because, you know, Helen got off. She was in an insane asylum for a while because, you know, she was just sitting there crying, you know, kneeling beside him crying, saying, oh, Morgan, I'm so sorry. I guess at that point, they both thought he was going to survive it. So evidently she didn't shoot him in the head or the heart or anything. And so the last thing he said to her was, get away from me, you dirty bitch. Right before he lapsed into unconsciousness. And so when she was incarcerated in the mental institution, they said she was, you know, for weeks she was still talking to him. You know. Now, I don't know what happened to the girl. But I know subsequently they released Helen. And she went down south somewhere. Now, Buster knows that part because Buster stayed in touch with her. But, you know, Higgins, everybody loved her because they thought Morgan was through until she's the one that brought him back.
Right.
So nobody that really knew him or knew them would think that she would have shot him on purpose.
Right.
So, but you talk to somebody like McCoy Tyner who didn't know her, and he was incensed on the fact that she had gotten off.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Fascinating.
So that's as I know it.